This is the Mentoring Developers Podcast, episode 80.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
In this episode of Mentoring Developers, I'll be talking to Greg Thomas. Greg is a software developer, he's a mentor, he is a consultant architect, and he's also a book author. He's going to show you how you can move up the tech ladder, code your way up, so to speak. And did I tell you that he wrote a book? He just wrote a book called Code Your Way Up. If you want to win a copy of this book, all you have to do is write me a comment. It could be on YouTube, it could be on the website. Just write a comment, let me know what you think, and also let me know what your career level is right now. Are you unemployed, junior, senior, manager? Where are you in your path? And send me a comment, and you may be able to win a copy of Greg's new book for free. So in this episode, we'll be talking about what you have to do if you want to get ahead in your tech career. We'll also talk about Greg's journey to see how he started and what got him interested and excited and what tips he has for you guys. So this is going to be a great episode. Don't miss it. Hey, everyone. Welcome again to Mentoring Developers. This is a podcast for you. This is a YouTube show for you. If you are a new developer or you want to be a developer and you're thinking about it, you're not sure if this is right for you, you come to the right place. Today, I have a very special guest. His name is Greg Thomas. Greg, how are you?
Great. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you. And there's something very interesting that I want the listeners and the viewers to know about you, because there's something very interesting in the way you're naming, you're code naming your projects, something about fish. Tell us a little bit about that.
It started a number of years ago. I was in a startup and we were working on a pretty complex project, and it had a very long name. It was like 7 or 9 long words. And so I got into as the kind of lead developer on it. I started having to do a lot more presentations with the team and the company. And so we kind of got sick of kind of calling it that big long name. And I kind of just settled on, like, at the time I had young kids and a tank full of goldfish. So we called it Aranda. And what was funny about it is we kind of just did that internally just so we could have one word to describe the project, and whoever we were talking to would get it, like, oh, okay, it's about this. But then what started to happen is it started taking on a life of its own. So, like, our sales guys started to like the name, and they wanted to talk to customers about it in that context and make them, you know, like, they were treating it like, well, it's like Coke. Like, we don't really know what it is, but it's something good. And even, like, it found its way, like, usually, you know, you don't put code names for projects into your actual code, but it started to, like, find its way into the code as well, and comments and what people were called naming classes. So it was pretty funny how it kind of took on a life of its own, and it kind of stuck. Now, like, when I'm working with groups and teams, you know, I'm a little more flexible on whatever we want to name our projects now. And actually, with everything going on with the pandemic, the group I'm with now, we're actually naming our releases based on soft drinks that we can't find in the stores anymore. So a lot of them are into Mountain Dew and other things. And so it's kind of become a little bit of a funny thing that hopefully we look back on and chuckle a bit about later.
It's good that we are code naming projects, because a lot of times, so everything has to have a name. I was just thinking, as you were speaking of my kids, if my kids didn't have names, and I would just say, well, the oldest one, the eldest one, come here right now.
Yeah.
The one with the funny hair, do this. That wouldn't work. We need a name. So what I don't think about when I think about a project, I don't really think about names, but every project has a name. But you're giving nice, interesting code names, which is just pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's something for the team to get behind, right?
Yeah, yeah. So
It's good. Naming things is one of the most important things in software, as you know, right?
Naming class files.
Naming class files, naming methods, everything. So that's pretty good. Now, you are a software developer. And you have been programming and coding and building things for a long time, right? And you're pretty successful right now.
I've been coding for a long time. And I still code today. Like I love it. And no matter what role I'm ever in, it's just something I always want to be doing as part of that job. Like I just don't want to get away from it.
But you're now at a more senior position. You're more accomplished. You wrote a book. We talk about that later. But let's take the audience back to the time when you just started, when you were early on, before you wrote your first program. What got you thinking about software, making software, building things with programming as even a thing? A lot of people, they're growing up, they don't get that exposure, right? My kids, I force them to do some programming because I feel like this is such an important skill, but most people don't have that. So what got you into this thing?
It's actually kind of funny. I actually kind of stumbled into it. I was in university and I was doing a business degree, but one of my roommates was in computer science. So one night I was having to work on a boring PowerPoint, and I happened to walk by his room and he was like coding something up and doing HTML. And I was like, oh, like what's that? He's like, oh, you know, like it's HTML coding, and then watch, you can view it in the browser and everything. And, at that moment, like I kind of threw up my PowerPoint and I did my whole presentation in HTML and everything. And I remember, I think it was the next day I was presenting it. And I had these like back and forth buttons and everything. And when someone would ask a question, I'd like actually use the back and forth buttons just so I could go, like, I'd look at the class and go like, can't you see how cool this is that like I'm pressing a button and the slideshow is going back and forward? And a lot of the people like were not impressed. They were like, okay, great. Like it's some pictures. But from that moment, I was totally hooked. And I was like, okay, like, so what else is there? So I started doing like HTML and VB and JavaScript and just like started going like to everything I could in the web, and just fell in love with like building things and then seeing people's reactions to what you had built. And like, if they came to you with an idea, like, you know, it'd be nice if we could like, make this expand when someone clicks on it, and then, you know, take their contacts and go to here. And I was like, yeah. And then, you know, throw in your own ideas into it as well. And then when you show it to them, they're like, that's even better than what I thought we were going to get. And I just fell in love with like the whole building it and learning, because, you know, you're just constantly always figuring things out and breaking stuff, or stuff breaks on you and then you're just like, okay, how do I fix this problem? So I think all those elements is where I fell in love with it.
That's good. So you started, I'm gonna say, in your either in your early 20s or late teens?
It would have been like I was 19 when I started. So
not super early, but then you got interested. Well, that's very good. A lot of people are interested in things. But then the next step is, what do I do? Should I get a degree and study this? Or maybe, you know, become an apprentice, or just go online and find resources? How did you learn the craft of programming?
Yeah. So I did actually have that moment where I thought, I think I was midway through university, through my business degree. I was like, you know, like I'm loving this web development thing. And oddly enough, I started to get like small contracts to do websites for companies or help them build, you know, like kind of jump in as a contractor and help them build their project, right? So, and those jobs were fantastic because they could like work outside my school schedule. Like I could work like 7 to midnight versus like having to, and I could work from home and just like upload pages for them to look at. So it was so flexible. And I actually had the moment where I was like, I wonder if I should just stop doing this and go back and do the whole computer science degree. Like, should I really do that if I want this as a career? And And I decided to go the opposite because I was like, I don't really want to go back and do like another 4 years of school. So what I did is I just kept buying books and reading people's blogs and just learning on my own. Like through each job, I got better and better. And then I was constantly learning stuff. And then when I got to my fourth year, everyone's like, okay, like, so what are you going to do? It's time to find a job. And I was just able to get a lot more interviews on the software development side. And the jobs were a lot more interesting. And I was lucky enough that before I finished, I had a job lined up. And I was like, okay, like, this is amazing. And so I think a lot of it was because, like, I did the self-taught thing, where I think that showed, you know, like, I had to push myself and show that I really loved it. And I think for my first employer, that kind of appealed to them. They were a small company of 15. So it was like everyone kind of had to, like, pull a little more than their own weight for the company to be a success. And from there, I never looked back. I just kept doing either it was gigs and contracts or other development opportunities. Like even when I think it was around 2001, like where there was that first dot-com bubble burst where people were like I was in a, I think 3 months I was out of work, but I just kept doing learning and development and stuff because I wanted to get back into it and I wanted to learn more. Like I was really hungry for it at that point. I was just consuming as much as I could.
I think this is great. My question, and I'm thinking as a new developer, I'm thinking, okay, you started learning, you got your first job, but then you also talk about gigs and extra projects and extra work because you wanted to learn, you were hungry. Are you doing it all at the same time? Or do you say, I worked for a year, then I took a break and I did this, and then I went back to work as a software developer? Or are you spending your nights and weekends doing things, learning different things? You have a day job and then you have a gig, you know, on the side.
Yeah. So I thinking back to my first couple of years, it was a bit of a combination of the two. So like I had a full-time developer job. And we were doing kind of like ASP and SQL and early, you know, C# and .NET.
Exciting stuff. And
yeah, and that and that and that was really fun. And then, like being able to showcase though that I understand databases and programming concepts, I was able to parlay that into doing small things on the side for either friends or like kind of referrals of friends, where I started to do things like PHP and MySQL and just other technologies. So at the time, I remember going like, this is great. Like I'm getting paid to just keep learning. And I thought like, I get to learn all this stuff during the day with all these great people that are kind of giving me this foundation stuff. And at the time, like I had a great senior developer that I was working with that like helped mentor me along and like think of things. And then I had this other stuff at night where like, or night or weekends where I was totally on my own. And I was like, okay, like how do I do a good job for them? And kind of learning all these other concepts. And I've always been very like a strong proponent of like, you know, it's good to be really strong in a platform or a language, but it opens your mind so much more when like you're understanding different languages and you're kind of learning different approaches to problems. Cause then you can start to transfer the concepts and the ideas and go like, oh, like it's too bad. Like PHP doesn't do this, but C# does, or like React does this. And like, even now I find it, like I've been doing some learning just on my own outside of what I do for consulting with customers and clients where like kind of going back to square one with things like Node.js and just kind of like, I just want to keep learning different languages. So so like it was a combination of both. Like at the time there wasn't like now you have like Udemy and Pluralsight and all these other great sites but I was just buying books at like bookstores as much as I could and just like consuming them, trying things out at both places and just experimenting all over the place.
Okay. So that's pretty good. So the lesson we are learning, folks, is that when you're starting out, that's the time to really exert yourself. Because if you're taking it easy, then you're going to go at the pace of everybody else. And everybody else is perhaps 10 years ahead of you. So when you're starting out, you need to really ramp up. That's how I see it. And do extra work, extra learning, and do different programming languages. Don't get stuck with, I wouldn't ask people to become an expert in a particular programming language when they're starting. Different programming languages, as Greg mentioned, teach you different ways of thinking, because they usually come out of different methodologies and different ways of thinking, and that helps you. And then what I've noticed is that I can transfer, Greg, knowledge, as you're saying, from one type of programming environment, one type of framework into another one. Sometimes, as you said, you can do something here in this place better than the other place. But a lot of times what I've noticed is that you can also do the same thing in this other place that you were here, but you just didn't know that that was a pattern or an idea
exactly.
That you could use.
Yeah, so even if you're building it yourself, right, like you said, like it's a pattern, you go like, wow, that would be a great thing to replicate over here. So I think that's where a lot of these great open source projects come from, right, in libraries.
That's great. Okay, so you got your first job, started making money. Now, I always thought, well, that's good. That's important.
Money was key, yeah.
Yeah. What I tell people when I offer my coaching is that it's very important to get your first job, a good first job that's going to let you grow, right?
Yeah.
The first job, the goal of your first job is not to make a lot of money or to have a career. The goal is to, the first job exists so you can get your second job. The second job is where you could maybe pick a more long-term position or maybe a place where you get more money or you have a career trajectory. But if that's what you're thinking about your first job, that's a tall order. So the second job, I think, is even more important than your first job. So how does that transition for you from going your first gig? Did you work one place and get another job also, or did you become a consultant after that?
Yeah, so it was actually kind of interesting. So my first job was like for a very small company. The whole .com kind of bust boom happened. So we shrunk dramatically from 15 people. We moved cities. So I left that job and I didn't have another job lined up. So it took a while to find a job. And actually, to your point, like what I was really looking for at that point was, I need something where I'm going to I can learn and grow more. And I kind of, at the time, I remember being like, cause I was the self-taught person. I didn't have like the computer science degree behind me, which was like people were kind of always after for the paper and stuff. So I thought, okay, like I need to focus on getting somewhere big where I can show like that kind of big enterprise development versus like, snappy startup, like, quick and spunky stuff. So, I actually approached it from the company I went to. I started off as their version control administrator. So I was like, okay, so that's the in, right? Like I remember doing the interview with them and they're going on and on about like how many projects they had and all these things they had to manage and how complex the source control was. And I remember going like, it doesn't sound that bad. Like, I think I could fix this. And like, 3 to 4 months. And then presumably you're not going to have me sitting around there. So like I get to start coding other stuff. So that's the mindset I went in with. And, sure enough, like signed on, did the whole, fixed all their source control problems and everything and migrated them to a new system and got all the developers on board. And during that time as well, like I was focused on learning like, okay, so what languages are they using? How are they using them? What's the learning I need to do behind the scenes? Because I wanted to get to the point when this project's done, I want to be able to just like go hardcore development. And I was able to make that transition like 4 or 5 months later. Like I was working on like more, like at the time we were doing some early e-commerce sites, and I was like, okay, great. So I'm learning about payment systems and interactions and B2B transactions, as well as developing to scales and different architecture and databases. And that was like a big kind of like growth piece for me. And then let me kind of also get into the other part of coding that I think is important about leading. So I started to lead some small teams and groups. And then actually, funnily enough, in that job, it got to the point where after a few years, I found out why I wasn't big on working in big companies is that they're sometimes very slow to adopt new technologies versus like my first company was like, look, I have an idea, uses this library, let's go. And, you know, it was like a 2-minute discussion and approval, and off we were. So I was at that company for 4 years, and midway through, I made a very big switch in my career where I went from doing software development to doing database architecture admin. And I found that to be very beneficial to me because like at the time I did it because like, okay, I just need to learn new things and I kind of like the company, but we're stagnating here. But making that shift, I learned all these new database technologies, infrastructure, design, all these concepts. And at the same time, when I got there, they were like, we need to automate some of these processes. We need to like build this. So I kind of became their like de facto developer in the group. And because I didn't now have to follow any standards, like really, I was just like, look, can you just build this up and go? Like I was able to download new frameworks and stuff and kind of get back. So I was kind of had the best of both worlds where it was like, I'll build you whatever you want and code it. And I'll do all this database stuff too. And I think that really set me up for now having, so now I could do all this development with a bunch of languages. And I also had this deep understanding of data structures and databases and data architecture that like very much would help me in kind of later stages in my career.
Hey, this is great. So you got in there and you were grabbing whatever opportunity you could find. You didn't create the opportunity, but it was there and you grabbed it with both hands. So that's what we need to do. When you're starting out, you know, some people have difficulties, right? Getting their first opportunity. Some people have difficulties continuing and finding success because it can be demoralizing. It's not what you signed up for. It's not what you wanted to do. But on the one hand, I completely agree with that idea that you should pursue your dreams and you should not waste time doing things that you don't necessarily want to do, but sometimes. And that what we do is we want to be in the environment where we can slowly grow. Because having this security of a job that pays you money and not have to look for jobs gives you the freedom to explore, the freedom to experiment, right? As you did. And slowly and slowly, you got the experience, and you learned different things, and people started liking you. So did you think, okay, let's just make a career out of this, so I'm going to stay, I'm going to retire from this company? But it didn't look like you did that.
No. Like, so I knew kind of, I was getting to where I was like, okay, like, the big company thing isn't for me. Like, I need, I miss the world of kind of small companies. Startups. So and that's kind of where I made the biggest choice is when I left that, which like you said, like there was a lot of security there and I would have been fine there. And I went to a startup and lived the startup life for a good 5 years of crazy coding and just constant learning. Like I don't think I ever learned at such a pace as I did in those 4 or 5 years. Just, and I think it was a company that, you know, just being surrounded by so many smart people, like at all levels of the company that I just, you, everybody that was there just loved it. Like I remember you would just always be having conversations with developers about topics. And so at that point, like being in that company, there was like never going back. Like this is the direction for me. I just want to like almost like just like code my brains out all the time. Like the products we were working on were cool. The pace was fast, constantly learning. You had an environment that supported you. It was just fantastic. And then actually it was there that, I started being asked to kind of lead teams and development projects. So then my work kind of started to take on a whole different aspect where like, I was still very much coding. But I was also now kind of leading a couple developers and mentoring them and, trying to ship a product out. So kind of took on another scale. But still, like, up until the very moment I left, I was coding.
This was great. I think what I noticed from your story is that when you were starting out, you had some senior developers who were offering mentorship, maybe support. You got a little bit of freedom to do some of the things you wanted to learn that gets you excited. And then when you got into a position of authority or leadership, then you offered your mentorship. I think mentorship is the key theme here in your story, I feel. What do you think about how people are offering mentorship or mentoring others? Is that a normal thing or were you the exception?
It was very, like, I never remember at that company going like, oh, can you be my mentor? Because I need a mentor because my code is garbage and you're so good and I need someone to make it better. I remember just it being very informal, but like we were all there to support one another. Like when one of us was working a problem, like it's like, oh, can you come over here to the whiteboard and we can draw this out? And it's like, yeah, sure. Whatever. It was just a great environment for fostering that growth and development. It was very much encouraged. In terms of like trying out new ideas and concepts, it was very much an environment where like, if you presented an idea of like, look, like I think we can do this if we do these four or five things, and it's like, okay, go run with it. It's like, oh, I thought I was the idea guy and there was going to be a whole team. So it's very good from that perspective. And I was very lucky to work with, some people that had like a lot of just happened to be great coaches and mentors that would, even if it was like 20 minutes here or half hour here, like sometimes we think about this relationship as like, it's very structured and very ongoing. And I don't think I had that, but I had this very informal relationship with like four or five people that were just great at helping you, get concepts across. Like we were very lucky to have like, the owner of, and the CTO of the company. It was very common. It was almost like every developer could like just walk into his office and kind of just like spitball an idea with him. And he would be very, upfront and like, okay, like that will not work. What else do you have? And he was always forcing you to think about other things, right? So things like, I learned so much about things like scale and performance and how to think about user experience, that were just, things he would just be throwing out all the time, right? So, it was a very technologically focused company where we had all that informal mentorship. So like when I think about how I kind of do that now with junior devs, and it's very much along the same lines of like, look, like I want to give you an idea of what we need, but I want you to run with it to see where you can go with it. And like, I'll come in and help you, but like, I want to see if you can go from step one to step eight. And I'll come in at step eight and help you kind of with the next jumps. Mm-hmm. But I want to see kind of encourage you to do that leaping on your own, because that's the best part. And that's where you see the growth in yourself.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So mentorship means different things to different people. And that's why I asked this question, because I get different answers from different guests. So there is something like a formal mentorship apprenticeship program, and some people do that, and that works really well for some people. But what's more important than a formal relationship. Now you're my official assigned mentor. What's more important than that is, as a junior developer, as a new developer, I feel that I am being supported. That's what's important, because you're not in your island, do this or you're fired, that kind of a thing. And I see this in a lot of companies where especially they have this sink or swim type of mentality. They are going to hire 10 people, for instance, and they know 5 of them are not going to make it. 5 of them will survive, 5 of them will be fired. So they give these aggressive projects and just rough them up and see if, and if you survive, then you go further. But there's a certain type of personality that thrives in this type of environment. All 10 of them would have potential. So a little bit of compassion, a little bit of empathy, I think, is go a long way. If as managers and owners of small companies, if we have that in our DNA a little bit, and whether you do it formally or informally, it's not important.
You know what? Like one example I was thinking about while you were talking is, I remember I was writing a piece of code to integrate with a piece of hardware to send text messages, and the piece of hardware we got, it was very hard to work with. So I remember one night I was there and I was struggling with it, and kind of the owner came by. I was like, "Well, why don't you just go use this piece of hardware?" I was like, "Well, that's like, then we're throwing out this one that I said would, I was hoping was going to work. And that does look a lot easier. The API is way better, but I'm throwing out all this work I've done, and like, I feel like I'm wasting your money." And it was kind of like, look, like, if you think that one's going to work better, then this was the experiment for us to get there. So let's do that. And I mean, like, I just remember that moment as a very kind of like, look, we appreciate all the work you're doing. We appreciate the ideas you have. We're here to build something good, and we know we're going to stumble along the way. And I think that's something that is always big to encourage in developers, especially as we go from like juniors to seniors and team leads and all that, is like to still have that coding mindset approach of, you know, it's like, how many times do I hit F5 during the day, and how many times does it work perfectly, right? Like, you're constantly just finding issues and issues, and like, and that's how, like, keep approaching that to everything else that you do.
Yep. And we are all learning. People who are managers, they don't really know. We don't get any training on how to manage or how to encourage people or how to foster mentorship or anything. We're just like, okay, now you're the lead or you're the manager. It's okay. So we're all learning, and we kind of, we need this feedback. We need this feedback loop. So hopefully this type of podcast, people are listening to that and they're like, they're thinking about it. They're like, we can do a little bit better and we can start this conversation. So this is good. If you are a listener or a viewer right now, you know that Greg is a great resource and he just wrote a book. So I want to bring us back to the book that you wrote, because this is about how to progress in your career. Am I right? What's the book about?
Yeah, like, really, I mean, kind of ending on the point you just spoke about. I mean, I was kind of thrust in the leadership role. And I remember, you know, my first couple months, like, just absolutely struggling with it, thinking about, you know, I'm an absolute failure. I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know why they put me in this. I just want to go back and code, even though I was still coding at the same time, but it was a different style of coding. And then as I kind of progressed and I started to manage other managers, like, I started to see kind of the same, you know, issues kind of, you know, expose themselves, like, people were struggling too. And I was like, all right, so there's something we need to fix to help developers kind of make that leap from not only becoming a manager, but becoming a leader of your team, right? Because there's a big difference, like, between being a leader and being a manager. You know, it doesn't really matter what your title is, but, like, I always like to tell people, like, look, like, your title might say manager, but you're a leader and your team is looking up to you and they're looking for guidance. So and how do you handle those struggles as kind of working through that period of becoming that leader. And the more I started to think about it, I was like, okay, so a lot of these behaviors and concepts that I'm thinking about, like, they really go back to starting when you're a junior developer of like, okay, so let's say I want to become a software manager and a software leader, and it doesn't always entail leading people. How do I get there? And so the book kind of caters to those two kind of groups of the junior dev and the developer that's just become a leader. And how do I make that leap? How do I do it successfully? How do I kind of still have confidence in myself at the end of the day? And more importantly, like, how do I like keep enjoying this job and everything that I'm doing and just enjoy being in this sector and not kind of get burnt out by it?
So both managing people and managing projects, those and managing the technology, right? So those are sometimes distinct roles. Are you tackling both?
Yeah, so like I talked to a couple different in the book, but like, I mean, I worked with developers who, they are fantastic leaders. They will lead, you know, like a massive customer support issue where someone needs to go and kind of deal with the customer, or it's not deal with them, but work with them for the next month or two, right? And the customer will be like, this person was amazing. Like they totally led the effort. They like revitalized our team. Like we have faith in your software again and everything you guys are doing. And then there's leaders who manage actual development teams. And then there's leaders who like manage like technology frameworks, right? And I think that's one of the things like I've always seen and worried about is that like don't pigeonhole yourself into thinking like I can only be a leader or manager if I manage people, and I don't want to manage people, so I'm not going to do that. And like there's so many other opportunities out there for you to lead. And even just like if you're wanting, you know, people who are like team leads and tech leads forever, like you are doing that leadership job. And if you're fantastic at it, then keep going. Like there's no reason for you to have that mindset like I gotta go to a manager, I gotta get to a director, I gotta do this. It's like you can apply these constructs in everything that you do.
Yeah,
like leading through code.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want users to think that programming is the only thing. You could, if you're in tech, my listeners, they know that there are many different types of work that you can do in the software development industry. You don't need to be a programmer. You may be a tester, a business analyst. You may be doing something kind of hybrid or design things. But getting to a place where you take ownership of the outcomes that your team is producing, that's where leadership comes in, right? And so anybody has the opportunity to rise up to that, and it's not for everybody. But for some people, this is their calling. And for some other people, they want to get better and better at their technical skills. And there's opportunities for that. So consider both. See where you're good at. That's my advice. But this book is going to help you perhaps decide if getting more into leadership is the right thing for you, and also what to do if you're there. So we're going to put the links for this book, and we're going to have some free giveaways, some coupon codes, something that will let you download this ebook for free. And there's also a printed copy, right? But you can download this ebook for free. If you go to the link on the website, it's going to be mentoringdevelopers.com/episode80. This is going to be episode 80. And if you're looking at the YouTube channel, do the same thing. Go to that website, or this would be in the description. And you may be the lucky one to get this book for free. But it was great to have you. Anything, any other mentions you would like to do about your website or any other place where they can learn more about you, Greg?
Yeah, if they want like the book's website, the book is on Amazon, Code Your Way Up, and the website is codeyourwayup.com. You can always find me on Twitter at the handle is Greg O'Matic. And yeah, I can give you more contact information, but by all means. Always, like, if you want to tweet at the book, either Twitter or Code Your Way Up Book, that's great. Like, always love to hear feedback and hear what people think and what works and what doesn't. So
I love thank you. I love the name Code Your Way Up. That's a great name.
Oh, thanks.
That's a great name because it actually it's fun, but I can also see what you're trying to say. So that's good. Okay, folks, go to that website, mentoringdevelopers.com/episode80. If you have questions, which I'm sure you do, either for me or for Greg, and if you want to send it to me, you can email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Okay, see you guys next time. Bye for now.
Thanks for having me.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.